to Chatting with Chemeketa, the show where we talk about everything related to college. Whether you're someone considering coming to Chemeketa, or a current student, an alum, a member of the community, a part of our local business and industry, we've got you covered. I'm Jessica Howard, Chemeketa's president.
And I'm Marie Hewlett, normally producing behind the scenes, but Les is on vacation, so I'm filling in. But Jessica, he's missing out because did you know we are celebrating an anniversary?
An anniversary?
Yes, we're celebrating 1 year of Chatting with Chemeketa.
Wow, 1 year. That is truly amazing. It seems like we just got started.
It does.
I remember our first episode, we actually talked about financial aid for students. So what better way to celebrate 1 year than to revisit this important topic with our financial aid director, Rob Hoffman. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Thank you, President Howard, and thank you, Marie, for having me on the show.
Rob, last time we spoke about financial aid, Ryan West was here. Mm-hmm. So when did you take over the reins of financial aid?
Yeah, I started here at Chemeketa in May 2023. Prior to that, I was at one of the Oregon Public Four-Year Universities for about 6 years. Always wanted to be a part of the community college sector, and luckily for me, the Chemeketa opportunity presented itself. And yeah, here I am today. But I've been working in financial aid for about 17 years now. When I was making my way through high school, I really started to recognize the importance and value of education and knew that I wanted to open, if I wanted to open doors of opportunity for myself, then I'd need to continue on and beyond high school. I think ultimately that's what led me into working in financial aid. After navigating and figuring out the whole financial aid process when I was going through college, I feel that's given me a desire to pay it forward and ensure that all of our community members have access to the same opportunities that I did. I strongly believe that education should be a right, not a privilege only reserved for those who can afford it. By helping students navigate the complex world of financial aid, my hope is that to help level the playing field and empower students to pursue their dreams without being held back by financial barriers.
Rob, I could not agree more. And you know, it astonishes me how much the financial aspect of attending college creates a barrier for students. Mm-hmm. I think it's a couple of things, but I'd love your perspective on it. One, I think filling out the forms is it's just a daunting prospect. Yeah. And mm-hmm. students have to ask their parents if they're still in high school for their income information and all mm-hmm. kinds of stuff. I mean, yes. It's sort of like it's a really adult thing to ask someone to do who may still be in high school. And so then there's that. But I also don't think that a lot of people understand how much aid is out there, you know, and I don't mean loans. I mean actual money that comes in the form of grants, mm-hmm, right, from the state or the federal government. Mm-hmm. And many students can attend Chemeketa Community College without really having to reach into their own pocket. This just seems like a really big hurdle.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I would recommend that any student, you know, completes either their ORSA application or FAFSA application. Those will certainly help students to determine if they're eligible for any Pell Grant or ICOG grant that might be available. Additionally, the state of Oregon has a lot of grant opportunities available. Oregon Opportunity Grant, ensuring that students are completing their FAFSA or ORSA applications to see if they qualify for the Oregon Opportunity Grant. That's super important.
So if I'm a student, like let's say I'm a senior. I'm a senior in high school, and I would really like to know more about, like, how much money is there out there for me to attend college? I have absolutely no idea. My parents don't know. I know how much some of the big universities cost, and it seems incredibly expensive. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that some universities require you to live on campus the first year. In fact, that's pretty standard, and that adds a ton of cost, you know, like $30,000 for the first year. And, I mean, right there, that just makes people think, I can't afford college.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of students, too, think that they won't qualify for any financial aid because they think their parents make too much money. I usually tell people, apply anyway. What do you think, Rob?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. Again, all students should complete either the FAFSA or ORSA, whichever applies to them. Additionally, like again, the state of Oregon, they have a lot of grant opportunities, such as the Oregon Opportunity Grant. And there's also for newly graduating high school seniors, there's the Oregon Promise program.
So if you complete, and I think you mentioned the two forms are the FAFSA,
mm-hmm.
and then the ORSA, and those are acronyms, right? So
correct.
FAFSA is federal, okay, federal application.
Yes.
For
student aid.
Student aid, okay. And the ORSA is?
The ORSA application.
Oregon,
sorry.
Student.
Oregon. So it's essentially, they're very, very similar forms, right?
That's correct.
And if you are someone who does not have a Social Security number.
That's correct.
For instance, if you're undocumented, something like that, the ORSA is the form
that
for you.
That would be the appropriate application, correct.
Yeah. Yep. But otherwise, FAFSA is the form. And then how do I even find? So am I right that if I just complete those forms and submit them, does somebody let me know what I might qualify for? Or do I have to do something else?
Sure. So if you submit the FAFSA application, both the Department of Education and actually the state of Oregon will let a student know what they qualify for in regards to federal grants and state grants.
So I really don't have to do anything except complete that form, whichever That's- form is appropriate, and then information will flow back to me,
yep,
like
via
on
email.
Whatever the
correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Rob, I heard there were a few hiccups this year with financial aid. Has that all been resolved? I know the form is much more simplified this year. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah. So the application it rolled out in early January, and it had a lot of technical issues associated with it, and it still does. The Department of Education had alluded to mid-March being a time frame when many of the issues would be resolved. It's currently just about mid-March right now, and we still have a lot of those issues, particularly for folks without Social Security numbers. The parents without Social Security numbers. The students that have parents without Social Security numbers are having issues completing the FAFSA form. But again, the Department of Education had said they hope to have that issue resolved by mid-March.
So it's still the same situation in that you either complete the FAFSA
mm-hmm.
or you complete the ORSA.
That's correct.
And then if you, gentle listener, if all you can do is complete this form,
mm-hmm.
you will then find out what opportunities are available to you. Now, Rob, I know one of the amazing things about living in Oregon is Oregon Promise,
mm-hmm.
right? But the trick with Oregon Promise, as I understand it, is you have to enroll in college pretty much
right after high school.
Mm-hmm. So that would be, I mean, if you graduate kind of in the normal time frame, June-ish, May, June, whatever, that would mean by fall you would be enrolling in college.
That's correct.
Community college. And if you go to community college in, you know, within that time frame, Oregon Promise will pay for a lot of your college, community
yes.
college. Is
yeah.
that right?
Yeah, it potentially could pay the rest of your tuition after federal or state grants have been applied.
But again, you only have to fill out the one form, and then both the federal entity and the state entity will tell you what aid you are eligible to receive. Is that how it works?
For Promise, you'd want to complete the FAFSA and the FAFSA or the ORSA, whatever,
right.
whichever applies, then also apply for Oregon Promise.
Okay, so that's a different application.
Yep.
But are you prompted to do that or is that a different, I'm trying to figure out, you know, how many places does a student have to actually go to
sure.
click buttons? And
right,
things?
Right, yeah. The Oregon website, the Oregon OSAC website, that's where you can apply the Oregon Promise.
Okay, and that's OSAC?
That's correct.
So that really is your state website that has all the information on it. And it probably has does it have the new FAFSA form on there?
It has a link to that, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Hey, Rob, Jessica brought up an interesting point. So if you're out of high school and you have that short little window where you have to get in, does the backlog with the FAFSA cause any issues for that? Or will they still be able to take advantage of Oregon Promise, even though there have been some delays with FAFSA and ORSA?
Yeah, it's not anticipated that these delays will cause any issues for future financial aid. Schools will certainly pick up their processing time once schools are able to receive this information, like FAFSA and ORSA data. But the financial aid offices will process them timely and ensure that students get their aid accordingly.
And on that same topic, if you take a gap year,
mm-hmm.
you no longer qualify for Oregon Promise.
For Promise, that's correct, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this is, you know, actually we had a booth a couple of years ago, Marie, you may well remember, it was at the State Fair, and we saw a ton of people came by our booth, and every time we saw someone who looked like they were sort of high school aged, we would say, hey, mm-hmm. Don't forget to apply, you know, to fill out your financial aid forms, meaning either the FAFSA or the ORSA, because it's through that application that you can be eligible for Oregon Promise. You can come to an Oregon Community College with a tremendous amount of your costs taken care of. And that's not including all the federal aid and the other state grants and on and on and on. And they, I can't tell you how many people did not know what I was talking about. Not only, which means the chances of them missing that window, unlike all the other forms of aid, which every year you have kind of a shot at in terms of, you know, the application process and timeline. Oregon Promise is something you have to do within 6 months of graduating from high school, period. And doesn't it pay for something like 12 hours worth of?
Yes, up to 12 hours.
Yeah, up to 12 credit hours, you know, which is a tremendous amount.
Absolutely.
Yeah, in tuition.
Can you describe that a little more in layman's terms?
Like what's 12 credit hours?
I'm thinking of folks out in the audience, and they might be thinking, 12 hours? That'll be done in a day.
Yeah. A typical full load. Right, full credit load, in other words, a sort of a term's worth of courses, begins at the 12-hour mark. So that's more, that's like 3 to 4 courses, essentially, classes that you're taking, depending upon how many, you know, how big they are.
Per term.
Per term. And so 12 is the sort of the threshold where we consider you a full-time student. So that amount is what would come to you in tuition dollars if you qualify, if you apply for Oregon Promise, which I don't think right now, is there an income limiting factor? There is not.
Not for the 23-24 year, no.
Yeah. So you can be, friends, you can be a multimillionaire and you can still get Oregon Promise, but you have to apply through, I'm not kidding you. So this idea that I think a lot of people have, which is, you know, I'm not sure, isn't financial aid for people who are, you know, experiencing some extreme,
right,
you know, economic duress. And there are, there's just a lot of different options out there.
Right.
But again, none of them can you even be considered for if you don't complete the FAFSA or, in the case of not having a Social Security number, the ORSA. And Rob, if there's one place to go, it would be that OSAC.
That's correct, yeah.
Oregon Student
Aid.
Aid.
Commission. We're terrible.
Something with a C.
Commission, I believe.
Just look up OSAC on
just
Google.
Just do OSAC. It's actually a part of the Higher Education Coordinating Commission.
Yeah.
So, I believe it's commission.
They are the ones who administer all the financial aid for the state, and that includes I think the forms for the federal consideration as well.
Hey, Rob, can't you find the grants for the Indigenous students there also?
Yes, that's correct.
And that's a huge thing, too, because I know there's lots of money available for our Indigenous student population.
Yes, the Oregon Tribal Student Grant. Yes, correct.
Yep. You know, since we're talking about aid, it's maybe also a good thing to just mention something that we have only at Chemeketa called Chemeketa Scholars. If you're a high school student, you have a 3.5 GPA or above, which is essentially an A-minus. B plus. If you have that GPA or a higher GPA, you essentially pay no tuition at Chemeketa. So imagine if that's your situation and you apply for Oregon Promise. What ends up happening, Rob?
Well, the Oregon Promise gets paid to the student. They essentially can use those funds for cost of living.
Right.
Or they could tuck it away, too, for attending a university when they transfer.
Exactly. So you're actually netting dollars, even after all the other costs around books and fees and things.
Yeah.
It really is. This is the kind of information that it's valuable to know it. If you don't know it, you tend to be missing opportunities. So, Rob, I am always so impressed with how many students your department is able to assist each term. I know it's been especially challenging this year with this rollout of this new version of the FAFSA, so I just want to thank you and your staff for all the incredibly hard work.
Yeah, thank you so much, President Howard, and thank you again for having me on the show.
You bet. And for all of our listeners, if you have questions about what we've just covered or comments about today's show, please write to us at chatter@chemeketa.edu, and we'll answer your questions through email or on an upcoming show.
And in just a moment, we're going to have an epic discussion, quite literally, that you won't want to miss. So stay tuned, and we'll be back after a very quick break.
Do you enjoy helping people and are also interested in a career in health sciences? Consider becoming a pharmacy technician. Employers everywhere are actively seeking trained pharmacy techs. Chemeketa Community College offers hands-on training that will lead to a rewarding career in as little as 9 months. What are you waiting for? Visit go.chemeketa.edu/pharmacy and apply today.
Welcome back to Chatting with Chemeketa. Marie mentioned before the break that we were about to have an epic discussion, and that is absolutely true. Marie does not tell a lie. Welcome, Genevieve Halkett from our EPIC program.
Thank you, Jessica and Maria. Thanks so much for having me.
EPIC, what exactly is that?
Well, the Empowering Professional Immigrant Careers, or EPIC program, its goal is really to help remove the barriers that many internationally trained professionals, you might also hear the term skilled immigrants, but basically anyone who has a degree from their country, to kind of reduce the barriers that they may encounter in the U.S. when they try to work in their professions. I think we've all either encountered the situation or we know somebody that's encountered it. We've gone out of town, we're taking a taxi to or from the airport, we start chatting with the taxi driver, and we find out that the taxi driver was a doctor, lawyer, concert pianist in their country. And we kind of wonder, well, why is this person a taxi driver? And, you know, the reality is that these professionals encounter a multitude of barriers, not just having a low level of English, which, you know, is a huge barrier, but they encounter a lot more than that.
Genevieve, tell me how this works. So let's say I'm one of those people. For whatever reason, I've left my country abruptly. I find myself here in Salem, Oregon, right? And I was a professional person. How do I even find this program?
That's a really good question. I mean, not knowing where to go, not knowing where the systems are. We've been doing a lot of publicity with, you know, local community-based organizations, Salem for Refugee. We've even started putting things out in the Northern Lights movie theater is going to have a couple of ads. Okay. But, you know, it's what really happens is usually they come somewhere that, you know, has some information. It might be WorkSource, it might be Chemeketa, it might be Salem for Refugees, and they get sent somewhere, and sometimes they get sent to Chemeketa, and sometimes they get sent somewhere else. But if they do come to Chemeketa, then they come and talk to me and have kind of a conversation about, you know, where they are, would this program be a good fit for them? And if their English level is too low, then they can take one of our ESOL classes. Okay. But, you know, then they're kind of tracked as they go. Mm-hmm. And they know that this program is kind of waiting for them at the end when they've got some English.
So once they get the English under their belt, what happens then? Because I'm guessing that you'd have people with a huge variety of backgrounds.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's insane how many people are in this country with degrees from a multitude of professions. What happens is they have a really great English. And so what happens is a lot of them actually just go and try and find a job. And they find that a lot of institutions, a lot of employers don't know what to do with a foreign degree, don't know what to do with a resume that doesn't have any U.S. experience on it. And so sometimes, you know, they're sent to get their high school diploma, or they're sent to go to a GED program, even though they might be holding, you know, a degree, a master's or a bachelor's in their hand. And, you know, if they don't have any social capital or any networks, which a lot of them don't, then they don't know what to do. So if they come to this program, the first thing that we really start with is getting a credential evaluation, which basically is an equivalency. So your bachelor's of science in your country is equivalent to a 4 years bachelor here, or it's 2 years. Most of the time, though, it's very unusual for it not to be an equivalent.
I suspect a lot of people would think it's very expensive. What kind of fees are involved with having your credential evaluated?
It's usually anywhere from $300 to $600, but then they also have to get it translated, which is sometimes more expensive than the actual credential evaluation. And what also happens is sometimes people do come to the EPIC program with their credentials evaluation, but it's from, so for example, if you're a teacher, you have to go through a credentialing agency called World Education Services. And so if you've gone to a different organization and you've gotten your evaluation, you have to do it again.
Wow. Wow.
So that's another, you know, $300 to $600.
Oh, wow.
Dollars.
Yeah. Is there financial assistance for this?
There is. Actually, in our program, which is two terms, we provide assistance with the credential evaluation, and we provide basically anything that's going to be a barrier to keep them from finishing this course. So we can help with childcare cost, we can help with transportation, we can help with you know, other training that they may need. You know, if they're an accountant, they may need to learn QuickBooks, for example. And then we also help, we have an internship program through our cooperative work experience. And so we help with the college credits for that. Sometimes they want to audit classes, you know, within Chemeketa. For example, we had a teacher's cohort and they audited introduction to the U.S. education system. And then they got into the practicum. So if they want to do it as a credit course, we would help with things like that.
That is incredible. Is this, how many students do we have enrolling in this EPIC program?
Well, up to now, that has been an issue because they tend to be pretty traditionally small. So mm-hmm. 7 to 10 students. And we always say, you know, we're small, but we're mighty. Mm-hmm. But because we've been doing a little bit more of an outreach, and I think that word is just kind of hitting critical mass, mm-hmm. We are getting a lot more students. We have a course coming up in April, and I believe we have 18 students right now in the process, and then we have another five who I'm kind of sitting down with to see if, you know, this would be a good fit for them.
I would think, knowing, I know a little bit about Salem for Refugees, and I know that they see sort of ebbs and flows, mm-hmm. right, depending upon certain political realities, etc. Are they a partner with, I mean, in terms of, do we?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We pretty much work hand in hand.
That's
great. If he says, I have five midwives, but can you come talk to them?
Oh, wow.
Or I think they just recently, outside of Chemeketa, they got money for a pilot training program, which you may have heard of.
I did.
So, you know, the issue for that, though, is usually when people are first coming in, they're in survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, focusing on something like this is not something they're ready to do.
Right.
But, you know, we keep tabs on them.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, you know, we find that maybe after a year or so, they're ready to really think about, okay, I'm ready to start my life, my career again.
Do we see groups in this program from a specific country?
No, actually. Strangely enough, we didn't have many Latinx students. We tended to have more Eastern European, African. The last EPIC course we had, the word had gone around, so we were seeing more students from Colombia. But I'm thinking right now, I haven't counted the nationalities, but I would say continent-wise, we're pretty well represented except for Antarctica. I mean, it literally is, you know, we've got Rwanda, wow. We've got Ethiopia, we have our first Afghan medical doctor. She's going join this one. So, you know, Congolese, wow. It's just, yeah, it's a little bit of, you know, Ukrainian, Russian, Moldovan, you know.
So let's say the student goes through the program and is getting, you know, all this assistance in terms of like navigating next steps and
mm-hmm.
the transcript, all the evaluation of mm-hmm. the educational pieces. But at some point, they need to be hired.
Right.
What happens at that stage of the game?
So what happens is they've already had a little bit of help with things like resume preparation and interview. They've been working. Hopefully, they've all gone through some sort of internship. And then what usually happens is they loop back around to our wonderful Kip Carlson, who's been working with us, and myself, and kind of go back into, okay, I'm ready to apply. What do I do now? And the really nice thing about us being housed in a community college is that we have all those wraparound systems so that it's, you know, it's not just, oh, my interviewing skills, you know. So mm-hmm. some of them are ready to go. Some of them do the internship. We had one woman who was from Mexico. She got an internship with Toro Taxes, and she ended up with a full-time job.
Wow.
Now, that doesn't often happen. But, you know, then those employers are actually really good. They're, you know, they've got that reference that U.S. reference. They've got the job experience. They've got the confidence that they can navigate in their in English in their job. And so, you know, they already have that sort of network set up. So
I've heard of people coming to Salem from an international country, and often they're coming in to take the English classes. So whether they're associated with EPIC or not, but it is through that English class experience and cohort that takes a little bit of time that they sort of develop a sense of community, when they really, that's the most important thing to sort of help attach you to a culture and to a place, right?
Yeah.
And that becomes then sort of the fertile ground from which you can grow. And I've talked to a couple of these folks who are have been extremely successful in this region, have stayed a long time. And they draw the line back to when they came to this college and had that sense of community. Do you get a sense of that from the work you do with the EPIC students?
Oh, definitely. But I would also say that we do publicize this in our ESOL. But I would say right now it's 50-50. So we have about 50% of our participants coming up from ESOL, and then we have another half who are coming, you know, from the street. Like, I heard from Salem for Refugees, or my friend told me, and they don't have that sense of community. So even when we do this class, it's a cohort model, and they're, you know, they're all professionals, and they all get it, and they all support each other, and some of them even recommend jobs to each other, or, you know, so they do get that sense of community if they haven't already gotten it. The ones coming up through the ESOL program are usually pretty comfortable at Chemeketa already.
What a heartwarming program.
Yeah, absolutely. And you seem like you're totally passionate about it. What drew you to this position?
I think, well, I have a pretty long history of working with the immigrant community in, you know, language and workforce-based programs. I worked in Ireland for 10 years with refugees and asylum seekers there. And that was really when we started seeing that, yeah, there is this population, and they speak, a lot of them speak really good English, but they're doctors and they're lawyers and they're judges, and they don't need English classes. They need to figure out how to practice. And so that's where I first started getting, you know, involved. In that case, it was getting them ready to go to Trinity College and, you know, getting them ready for English, but also placing them and finding those networks. And so, you know, when I came back to the United States, it was just so great to say, oh, okay, that's what you guys are looking for. Yeah. So it was just like a really nice synergy.
You know, with so many professional people who are coming over as refugees or immigrants, and feeling like they have to start over, this is an absolutely incredible program. And I feel, even though our audience may not be the folks who we're trying to reach with this story, everybody knows somebody who is in that position. So how would we get those folks to connect their friends to you and EPIC?
Well, basically, I would just, the easiest thing to do is a quick EPIC Chemeketa search. My contact information is there. The information about the program is there. And then it's just a matter of them maybe coming to see me. They can do it on Zoom. You know, they can do it on the phone. They can come on campus and just talking to me and seeing, okay, is this a good fit for them? And then we just go from there.
I think that is absolutely wonderful. I'm so glad that you were able to share that with us today. This is one of those little niche programs that is so transformative and is different enough that maybe it's challenging to get that information out there. So just really appreciate that. And it has been an epic episode. I want to thank you, Genevieve, for sharing all this with us today.
Thank you, Jessica. Thank you for Maria. I've been really happy to be here.
And for our listeners, if you want to know more about what you've just heard, be sure to email us at chatter@chemeketa.edu. You can also send us comments about the show or suggestions for future topics. Again, that email address is chatter@chemeketa.edu.
And very sadly, our anniversary show has come to an end. So next time you tune in, we'll be starting year number 2, and it will be filled with just as many interesting topics as year number 1. So be sure to tune in again next time. And in honor of Les, I have to say it, same chat time, same chat channel. For Chatting with Chemeketa, I'm Marie Hewlett.
And I'm Jessica Howard.
Bye. Bye.